Well, good morning. We are continuing with the series of lessons that we've been doing, looking at meals that Jesus has in the Gospel of Luke. And this morning we're going to be looking at a meal at the home of Martha and Mary. And while in this passage the meal is more implied than directly stated, I do think that it is one of those meal texts. And you can see that there are different responses that each of these women have to Jesus when he enters into their home. It's, I think, one of the more timely passages for our world and our lives, as one of them invites Jesus into her home and yet is so distracted that she doesn't actually spend time there with him. And the other, even though she gets judged for it, she ends up not doing some of the social responsibilities and the normal acts of hospitality that you would expect because Jesus was there. And I think there's a reminder in it that we live in a world that is so full of distraction. We live in a world where a million things can pull us in a million different directions, but the good thing and the necessary thing is sometimes to block all that out and to remember that Jesus is alive and well, and that Jesus is who matters most. But before we get to that story, I want to talk about what happens a little bit earlier in Luke chapter 10. So the story we're going to be is right at the end of the chapter, Luke chapter 10, verses 38 through 42. If you have your Bibles, open them to Luke chapter 10. But it's actually right before that that I think we get a good setting for where this story comes from. Jesus is approached by a lawyer, and the lawyer asks him a question. This is Luke chapter 10 and verse 25. It says, "And a lawyer stood up and put Jesus to the test, saying, 'Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?'" What is the thing? What is the necessary thing? What is the good thing? What's the essential thing that must be done? And it's interesting what Jesus says. And the way Luke records it, Jesus doesn't actually even give him an answer, per se, at least not right now. Jesus flips the question around. In verse 26, he says, "What is written in the law? How does it read to you?" So he says, okay, you're asking the question. He's asking it to test Jesus, but Jesus says, "I want to see what time and thought you've put into this question. So how does the law read to you?" And the lawyer answers. This is verse 27 of Luke chapter 10. "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." He combines some passages from Deuteronomy 6 and Leviticus 19 about loving the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and loving your neighbor as yourself. And he says, that is what you must do. That is the one thing. That is the necessary thing. You love the Lord your God, and you love your neighbor with all that you have. And it's right after that answer that Jesus agrees. Jesus tells him, this is verse 28, Jesus said, "You have answered correctly. Do this, and you will live." All right, so that's actually a remarkable answer. Jesus doesn't say, "Well, what you need to do is you need to go back to Leviticus or to Exodus chapter 19. That's when they arrive at Sinai, and then from that point forward, there's going to be a whole long list of laws that you have to follow." No, this is a summary statement, because if you get this thing right, if you get love right, then the rest of the law will fall into place. The rest of your response to God and your response to others will fall into place. There is a correct answer to what's the most important thing, and it's love. Loving God and loving your neighbor. And so it's right after this conversation that there are two stories that are told. One of them is about, it's very famous. It's about a man who is beaten up on the side of a road and left for dead. And after being walked past by a rabbi and a priest, he ends up being seen by an enemy, a Samaritan. And the Samaritan ends up caring for him, nursing him back to health, saddling him on his own donkey. He carries him to an inn, and he has medical care for him that he pays for. And you have the enemy who shows genuine love for the man who you would expect him to walk right past. And in this, we have an example of what it means to love your neighbor as yourself. Now, in this, what Jesus is doing is he's redefining the word neighbor to not simply include those who live close to me or those who look like me or those who worship like me. The neighbor can include even the enemy who you disagree with about everything else. And after saying that the Samaritan can be the neighbor, you might read that and think, okay, well, I get that. Like, if I'm supposed to love my neighbor, and I'm beat up and I'm in need, and someone who I would expect to be cruel to me is nice to me, sure, I'll consider that person my neighbor, and I can love that person. But the way Jesus ends it is not by saying, so love the Samaritan. It's by saying, so go and do likewise, meaning go be the Samaritan. Go be the one who breaks down that barrier of love and loves the enemy and loves the person who you wouldn't consider your neighbor. Instead, consider that person your neighbor. Treat them as a neighbor. Love them as you would want to be loved. It's a radical and powerful passage on expanding love beyond the barriers that are ordinarily placed on it. All right, that's the next story. So as you're reading through Luke 10, you get, I think, a picture of what it means to be a complete disciple. You're told to love the Lord your God, and you're told to love your neighbor as yourself. The Good Samaritan, I think, is a powerful picture of what it means to love your neighbor as yourself. That's the whole point of the parable. It's explaining that passage. But then it's followed by the story of Martha and Mary. And what I think is Martha and Mary, this story might be a picture of what it means to love the Lord. In the story of the Good Samaritan, you clearly have loving your neighbor. But in this one, you get what it means to love the Lord. In fact, Jesus, beginning in verse 38 through 42, this story about him going to Mary and Martha's, he's not even called Jesus in this text. You know what he's called every time? The Lord. That's just the word that's used for him three different times in these couple of verses. Jesus is the one who is the Lord. In fact, if you look at chapter 10 and verse 39, it says that Martha had a sister called Mary, and she was seated at the Lord's feet, listening to his word. I think that's one of the ways that you love the Lord, is you prioritize the Lord, you go towards the Lord, you sit in the presence of the Lord, and you listen to the Lord. But then you continue on in verse 40, Martha says to Jesus, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the serving alone? Tell her to help me. And so while Jesus is there, Martha is getting everything ready for the meal, to be a good host, to practice hospitality the proper way, whereas Mary's not helping at all. She just went to go be with the Lord, and she went to sit at the feet of the Lord, and she went to learn from the Lord. And Martha's kind of upset about that. She's thinking, there's a lot to do, and here you are over there. Why are you with the Lord instead of over here serving with me? And I think it's because when the Lord is in your midst, nothing else matters. I think it's because she loved the Lord with all of her heart, soul, mind, and strength, and that's where she was going to go. And so when you look at these two stories, you see one of them, clearly, the Good Samaritan, is about how to love your neighbor as yourself. The other one is showing what it looks like to love and to prioritize the Lord. Verse 41, it says, but the Lord answered and said to her. So all the way through, that word Lord, it pops up here in this text. But then finally, I think the applications of these two parables are both essential to being a complete disciple, or one of them's a parable, one of them's a story. But one of them, the Good Samaritan, ends with Jesus saying, this is verse 37, go and do the same. That's actually a really important part of being a disciple, the idea that you go and you do. There is something about being a disciple that means you are supposed to be active. You are supposed to embody that which you hear and learn. You're supposed to imitate. You're not supposed to walk past the man on the side of the road who's been beaten, who's in need, and think, man, poor fella. Oh, well. And then go on your way. You don't look and say, man, someone should really help him out. You actually go and you do. You have to put it into practice. That's part of being a disciple. And I think we appreciate that. But there's another side that it's an essential part of being a disciple, and sometimes it gets more of a bad rap, I think. I think sometimes people neglect this one or don't like this one as much. And that is what happens in the story of Mary and Martha, which is sitting and listening. She sat and listened while Martha was doing all the doing. Martha was doing all of the work, but Mary was sitting and listening and not helping with the work and the service. And you would think, no, go and do. That's what you're supposed to do. But instead, she sat and listened. You know what is actually really true? That's an essential part of being a disciple too. Sometimes we can think, I'm tired of sitting and listening. We don't do enough. We need to go out and do. And you know what? We should go out and do. But going out and doing can only happen properly when you've spent a lot of time sitting and listening. when you spent a lot of time learning. Sometimes it's the sitting and the listening that's the hard part of discipleship. People want to go out and do. I remember an illustration I heard one time, and I see a lot of areas of life where it's applicable, where you have these two fellows who are out there with an axe chopping down trees, and they're actually competing against each other to see who can chop down the most trees. And they start at the same time, and they end at the same time, but right in the middle of the day, one of them stops for about an hour, whereas the other one, he never stops. He just keeps on going, and he thinks, hey, that gives me an hour advantage. I'm going to chop down more trees. And yet at the end of the day, day after day, the guy who stopped and took the break is the guy who's chopped down more trees. And eventually, the fellow who's working himself to the bone, he comes and says, why is it that you keep chopping down more trees than me? What gives you the advantage? And the man who takes the hour-long break says, well, during that hour, not only am I resting, but I'm also sharpening my axe. Like, sometimes, if you just keep hitting the tree over and over and over and over again, the axe can get dull, and it becomes less effective. Sometimes sitting and listening is how you sharpen your axe, is how your going and doing actually becomes more effective. But they're both a part of being the complete disciple. And both of these stories show us how to love neighbor, how to love the Lord, how to do, and how to learn. And I think there is value in listening to them both. But as we get to the story of Martha and Mary, I think it's important to see where Martha goes wrong. Martha welcomed, this is verse 38 and 40, Martha welcomed him, or Jesus, into her home. That's actually a great thing to do. She's practicing hospitality. She's inviting. By the way, that's kind of like one of the goals of this whole thing is to get us to invite each other into each other's homes more, to be hospitable, to open up our doors to one another. And so we're talking a lot about meals during this series of lessons. And Martha's doing a great job. And she invites Jesus into the home. But what happens when he gets there? It says in verse 40, but Martha was distracted with all her preparations. You know, it is actually hard to be hospitable because there's a lot that's expected of you. Your house should be kind of clean. You're supposed to have like a meal ready. You're supposed to have like a place for people to sit. You're supposed to make people feel welcomed and comfortable. And it's like there's all sorts of things that you have to do in order to get everything right, in order for the act of hospitality to go well, in order for people to enjoy it. And she is stressing and fretting about all of those things. Making sure there's a place to stay, making sure that the place looks nice, making sure the food is good and cooked perfectly. And there's all these things. And you know what? Not one of those things is wrong. Not one of those things is harmful. In fact, those are good and important things to do. But even good and important things can become distractions from what matter most. And I think we live in a world where that is absolutely the case. I think we live in a world where there are a lot of good and important things. There are justifiable distractions, and yet they become distractions nonetheless. You can look at your schedule and you can say, well, I got to go to work. That's a good thing. That's an important thing. That's something I'm supposed to do. That's something that's expected. So I got to go to work, or I got to go to school, or some people both. And those are things that are good and important. And then, you know, there's sports and the kids are in sports and I got to take them to this practice and I got to take them to that game. And that takes up a lot of time. But then I can't let the house fall apart. So I got to get clean in the house and I need to make sure that we don't live in a pigsty, and I got to make sure we're not covered in ants and all of that stuff. And so I do the housework, and then, man, there's bills to pay. So I got to think more about work, and I have to think about what's coming up, and I have to think about hospital bills, and I have to think about the mortgage, and I have to think about increasing prices and inflation and all of this stuff. And then not only that, I have my social obligations. I'm trying to just keep my head above water doing work and school and sports and housework. And then there's 18 things going on in the next 2 months at church, and I need to make an appearance to a couple of those, or there's things at PTA, or there's things where these group is getting together. So I got to do all the social obligations, but I want to spend quality time with my family. I don't want it to just be work, so how do I carve out time to go and to just go to the mountains with my family? Or how do I carve out time to sit and have a conversation with my kids or with my spouse? And then there's health concerns. I need to exercise. I need to take care of myself. I need to make sure that I am setting myself up well for the future. And there's hobbies. you know, if all you're doing is just one obligation after another, after another, after another, you'll go insane. You need to do something that's for you. You need some self-care, as they say, and something that you care about. And so you try to find some time for a hobby. And then there's actually doing good things for others. There's serving other people. There's people here at the church who have had surgeries, and you need to make food and bring it to them. And so you want to do that. And then there's good ministry things at church. Like, there's so many things to be involved with here. There is Lads to Leaders, and there's Tuesday Breakfast Club, and there's helping with the food pantry, and there's like teaching Bible classes, there's leading in Soul Train, there's a thousand, there's mission work, there's all kinds, there's quilting, like I'm just, every time I try to move on, I think of another thing, but like there's all kinds of things that you can get involved with here, and every one of those things take time, and they're all, everything on this list, I mean, some are better than others, but everything on this list is a good thing. Everything on this list is a necessary, you would think, thing. Everything on this list we should do, right? Like, this isn't a bad list. This isn't like a list of, all right, get drunk and ignore my family. I got to make time for that. Like, there's not evil things on this list. They're good things. Martha wasn't doing anything evil. She wasn't doing anything bad. She was doing something good. But even the good thing, if unbalanced, it can become a distraction that keeps us farther from Jesus. Like, even church work can sometimes fall into a trap of becoming an obligation that you have to get done, and you actually forget that Jesus is the reason for the whole entire thing. Family's great, but if you focus so much on your family that you neglect Jesus, then you've actually forgotten the one thing your family needs more than anything else. Family doesn't need all of those other things. It's fine if your house is a little bit of a mess sometimes, that you can still be a productive, live a meaningful life. You can still have what matters most. But sometimes it's so hard not to fall into the trap of getting all of the distractions done and forgetting what ultimately matters. Mary, on the other hand, did what mattered. The Lord was at her house. I'm doing nothing except for going and being with the Lord. She had a sister called Mary who was seated at the Lord's feet, listening to his word. I mean, what else is there to do? That's more important than getting the table cleaned off. It is. Like, the Lord is there. That's more important than anything else that you could think of in that moment. That's what all of life is about. And it's right there. And he is right there. And he's in her house. That's what Mary's going to do. And you know what? When Mary does that, she's demonstrating, I think, what the proper priorities are, because she's ignoring some social boundaries and some requirements. That's not a comfortable thing for her to do, I'm sure. What would ordinarily be expected is, yeah, you go and you do the housework. You know, I've been at this is something of a generational thing, but I've been at people's houses before where you have the meal and the men are sitting there. And the women are doing all of the cooking for the meal. And then they set the table. And then you eat. And then the women all go and they, like, do the dishes and clean everything up. And then the men go into a room and talk. And then the women go into a room and talk. And that's, like, they're mostly separated. I've been to a number of those interactions. And for a woman, say, to, like, not do the dishes and clean up afterwards, but to come and just sit in the room with a bunch of men would probably be an uncomfortable thing. For her to like, she would feel like she's breaking a rule or something like that. And yet, that's what Mary does. Instead of going and being with where the woman is supposed to be, she ignores that barrier and she goes to sit at the Lord. And she sits at the Lord's feet. That's the language of discipleship. That's the language of listening and learning. One of the things that I love about reading about Christianity and the ancient Christianity when it first started is, there were not many opportunities for women, particularly with things like education and learning and discipleship in the ancient world. And yet, that's one thing that is prioritized in early Christian circles. You see it in stories like this. You see it in 1 Timothy chapter 2, where a woman is supposed to sit and learn and listen. Like, the idea of a woman having a chance to learn and to listen is a rare privilege that was not often afforded. Education was usually something for men, and women were to go do other things. But here we have Mary who leaves her obligation, social obligation, to sit at the feet of Jesus and to learn. She wasn't going to let anything stop her from doing that. There was work to be done, but you know what? It could be done later. She wasn't going to let the work, and it was important work, she wasn't going to let that distract her from what actually mattered most at that moment. What she was going to do was the Lord was at her home, and she was going to soak in as much as she could. That's the right choice. The house might not be perfect, but that's the right choice. And Jesus wants us to know that's the right choice. I just hit a button. Oh, I fixed it. Good. I'm supposed to hit this one, and I hit the wrong one. Okay. She prioritized the Lord while he was at her house. And because of that, she ended up making the most of this opportunity. Now, having said that, and this is important, because if you do this, if you sometimes let those other obligations slip to focus on your spiritual life, to focus on the Lord, to focus on what matters most, you might be judged for it. She was judged for it. Like, she was thought of as probably being lazy or selfish. She was thought of as maybe not loving her neighbor as she should, or her sister as she should. She was criticized because she put the Lord first. Because there are requirements that people put on us, that society puts, that hospitality puts on you, to think you have to do things this way and in this way. And if you don't do them that way, then it's wrong. And she didn't do them that way. And Jesus was actually okay with that. Others weren't, but Jesus was. I think that's an important thing to note as well. Sometimes we feel so much pressure because there's all of these eyeballs out there, and you have to be the perfect mom or the perfect dad, or you have to get everything done the right way, and you have to do all these. And sometimes, especially if you're going to be a follower of Jesus, you have to get used to being imperfect in the world, because following Jesus sometimes requires us to throw off those obligations and say, you know what, this matters more. Time with the Lord matters more. So, having said all this, I think there are a couple of important lessons that we could learn from this text. Four important takeaways I want to mention. One of them is that service, apart from listening to the word of the Lord, is unacceptable. That's not what Jesus wanted. Service is good. Service is a wonderful thing. But service can easily end up misguided if it doesn't come from time spent listening to the Lord. So don't always spend your whole life serving. Instead, find some time for God. By the way, Jesus did that. Jesus, during his ministry, he could have just nonstop been serving all day, every day. And yet, he took time. For example, if you look at the very next chapter 11 and verse 1, the very next verse after the story ends, it says, it happened that while Jesus was praying in a certain place, and he goes off, and he does that regularly. That's a habit of his. That's an essential part of his ministry, to spend time away from all the work and just to spend time with the Lord. Service, apart from time spent listening to the Lord and time spent praying to the Lord, is it often can become a distraction. In fact, service itself is good, but Martha's service was full of distraction, worry, and conflict. You know, she was distracted from what mattered most. She was worried and bothered about all the things that needed to be done, and she turned against her sister and had conflict because of it. Sometimes there's always things to do. I mean, there are. Like, there's just always going to be something to do. But sometimes we can get so focused on doing those things that we don't even realize that it's robbing us of our peace, robbing us of our commitment to the Lord, who matters more. If your service is causing you to turn against others, then you need to recalibrate. If your service is causing you to be frustrated at all the people who aren't serving in the way that you're serving, then it's time to step back from it and to rethink about your priorities a little bit. Service should not turn us against one another. And that happens. That happens regularly. It happens in churches. It happens at Mary and Martha's house. That's a constant concern to be aware of. Jesus, another takeaway, expects us to provide a different example of hospitality. Now, this one might seem a little strange, but as you read through the Gospel of Luke, he has quite a few comments that criticize the way hospitality is practiced or the way that feasts and meals and banquets are thrown in his society. For example, he tells people, hey, when you're going to someone's house, the common thing to do is to try to get like the best seat so you look like the most important guest. I'm going to tell you, this is in Luke, to do the opposite. Go find the lowest seat while you're there. And the worst thing that'll happen is you sit in the seat you chose. The best thing that'll happen is they'll come and take you to a nicer seat. It's like, but choose humility in these. Don't use these for social climbing. Choose humility when you go to someone's house. He also says, when you throw a banquet, don't invite like all your wealthy friends who you want to be seen at your house and people will think, oh, wow, he must be in the upper echelon of society. Instead, invite the poor, the sick, the lame, the blind, like all of those who are outcasts. Invite the ones who could never repay you. Like, that's what the kingdom of heaven is going to look like a lot more. The people who were neglected on earth are welcomed at that table. So welcome people at your table like that. That's, again, a critique of the way that people have often done it. And this right here, this story, is a critique. Don't be so focused on everything being perfect that you either don't become hospitable. That's often what happens is we think, well, it's so much work to invite someone over, I just can't do it. And so we don't invite people over. And I think an important part of ministry can be lost because of that. But then finally, this is a lesson from Mary. Don't let any barrier keep you from time with Jesus. We talked about all those distractions that can get in the way. There's only one thing that's truly necessary. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and your neighbor as yourself. This story begins with that question being asked. What's the one thing that matters most of all? What's the one thing I must do? And it's love. And I think this story helps us zero in on that idea. And other things are important. Other things matter. But there's really only one thing in eternity that's necessary. And so Jesus' answer, after Martha complains about her sister and says that, tell her to come help me. Jesus says, Martha, Martha, you're worried about and bothered about so many things, but only one thing is necessary. For Mary has chosen the good part, or the good portion, which shall not be taken from her. Mary cut through all of the red tape of social interaction and found what mattered most, and it was Jesus. And that's where she was going to sit. And he says, that's actually the good part. That is what matters most. And that's not going to be taken. Think about what Martha's actually asking. Mary is at the feet of Jesus learning. And she's saying, no, pull her away from Jesus to go clean that table. That, like, she's actually talking about pulling her away. Like, that's not going to happen. We're not going to take the good portion away from her. She chose what matters most, and she's going to get to stay. Let's make sure in our lives we don't get so distracted that we forget about what matters most. Prioritize time with God. Prioritize worship. Prioritize sitting and listening. Prioritize time spent in scripture, time spent in Bible classes, time spent learning in the community of faith. Prioritize time spent in prayer, where you pour out your heart to God. It might not seem like you're doing much, but sitting and listening and praying are essential parts of discipleship. So as we bring our lesson to a close, here's the challenge. Slow down. Try to have fewer distractions and responsibilities. Remember, there's only one thing that matters. Sit, listen, and learn. If you're not doing that, then you're ignoring an essential part of what being a disciple is. And in all things, remember what matters most. It'll help you not be so stressed about the small things that can clutter up a schedule. Remember what matters most and what Jesus has called you to. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength, and your neighbor as yourself. And if you get that right, all of those other million things will start to fall into place. If there's anyone here who would like to become a Christian this morning, if there's anyone here who would like the prayers of the church, you can talk to one of our elders in the library in the back, or you can come and sit on the front row. But if you have a need, please come while we stand and as we sing.